lore and give me the confidence of some mediocre white man. Mm-hmm. Any of the people on this list mm-hmm. don't fun people look like you.
Yeah.
Do you know that? Mm. If I were you, I don't think I'd waste a lot of time like talking to VCs.
Yeah. All right, welcome back to episode 5 of Fun BMC. Today we have Joyce Park with us. She's the CTO of 106 Miles, and she has really kind of crazy, amazing story about her childhood all the way up to present day with tech. And I've known Joyce for a long time. She's been in the tech industry for a very long time. So welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Let's talk about kind of, you went to University of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Did you study computer science?
No, I studied history.
History?
Yeah.
No way.
Comparative history.
So I'm a history major too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Boo!
Yes, like the three history majors
yeah.
in the Valley. The woman we interviewed last week was also a history major at
oh,
Yale.
Wow.
I was like, what are you doing in tech?
you know, that was what I studied in school.
Yeah.
But then one day when I was in maybe like my 7th year of graduate school, I saw the internet and I was like, fuck this graduate school. I'm gonna go to like work on the internet.
Yeah.
So I did.
You started 106.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. Like that's a big part of the community here in the Valley. I feel like it embodies a lot of the values that we held when we first came to the Valley, and it was very welcoming to newcomers. I'm not a technologist, but I was, you know, I made my way through. Talk about 106 and like Adam and the Panda and all that.
Okay. So what happened was 15 years ago, I was the tech lead. I was the front end lead at a company called Friendster.
Never heard of them. Sorry.
So
for the younger
Friendster
audience,
was
Friendster.
Like Facebook
yes.
before
yes.
Facebook. And so I was the tech lead and you know, we built all this stuff and things were going okay. But I got famously fired
mm-hmm.
by a CEO who had pretty recently come from Hollywood. And so I get fired and there's this big brouhaha. And the opportunities I was seeing were to become an entrepreneur. Like all the VCs wanted to meet me and, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, whatever. So I went to a lot of meetings and what I realized is, when you are a technologist in Silicon Valley and you don't know anything about, you know, the business side, you just pray for people. I mean, they're looking for you, right? Like you're like the antelope and they're
yeah.
like the lion.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. I mean, people would meet with me and I barely knew them and they would say, Joyce, I'm going to give you half of my company. I'm like,
for what?
I know.
Yeah.
This is my idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to do all the work. I'm going to hire. I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. What are you doing?
Mm.
It's like, I'm going to raise money.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, maybe I need to learn how that works
mm.
because, you know. So I quickly realized the only people I felt that I could trust as a technologist were other people who had gone through the same experience.
Yes.
So like, you know, you were a CTO and you met somebody and he helped you raise money and
mm-hmm.
you start this company and blah, 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 blah. So this was in 2005. So January of 2005 we started. So it's been 15 years
mm-hmm.
already. And what we do is we help the technologist. So we help the entrepreneurial engineer.
Mm-hmm.
That's our job. And a lot of what we do is not what people think
mm-hmm.
because people think, oh, you know, we help them raise money, you know, whatever, whatever. No, a lot of what we do is discourage them from whatever dumb idea they have. You know, like,
yeah.
oh, you want to raise money from, I'll give you an example. This person who came with a very good introduction asked me to introduce her to many VCs. I was like, you know, many of the people on this list
mm-hmm.
don't fund people look like you.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
And like, why am I supposed to be the one who has to say that?
Yeah, well, who else would say it? The VCs would never say that. They would just take the meeting and not fund you.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of the whole system here works on this passive-aggressive bullshit, right? Like, oh, that's a great idea. Keep in touch. Mm-hmm. You know what? No. By the time I prove myself out to whatever level you're asking me to do, mm-hmm. like, I won't need you.
Right.
So why would
right.
I keep in touch with you?
Right.
Jerk off. So anyway, we founded 106 Miles in January of 2005, to help entrepreneurial engineers. And for a long time, we had meetings where we would try to keep out anybody who wasn't an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have the people, the speakers come and give a presentation. And then in 2009, I had a brain aneurysm. And so I had to have like a brain surgery where they took out this part of my skull and then they fixed it and then they put it back. And I just couldn't do that much like prep work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just threw it open to whoever wanted to come. And we found that actually we still have a mission. I mean, even though we weren't doing the formal presentations,
yeah.
we found that in a weird way, it was a bigger mission than ever because there were a lot of people who just needed to hear somebody say, you're taking money from the wrong person.
Mm.
Or, you know what, this idea doesn't have a business model.
Right.
You know, it's a great product,
right.
but there's no business model attached and you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, we just gave people permission to quit.
Mm, interesting.
You know, which sometimes an entrepreneur needs another entrepreneur to say, it's okay if you fail.
Yeah.
So a lot of what we do, though, is governance related.
Mm-hmm.
And which is like the least sexy, you know, like, you know, oh, governance.
Yeah.
Who's excited about that?
I am.
Okay. But what we do is we try to tell people, you can lose so much money. Because you didn't want to read this 250-page contract, or because you trusted this person who
yeah.
shouldn't have trusted, or you thought you understood the IP law in your state, but it actually intersects
mm-hmm.
with, you know, like employment law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not sexy, but it's like our thing is don't waste your time.
Mm-hmm.
If this isn't going to work out, quit now.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
like take another shot.
Yeah.
In a couple years when you're not working for this company anymore or
right.
when you have more resources or when
yeah.
you have a better partner or whatever it is you need. And so that's what 106 is really about.
I think that's really important because there's two things. One is it's a strong community of trusted people, other founders that you can go and talk to
yeah.
and be completely honest with
yeah.
and be vulnerable to
yeah.
and say, hey, you know, my business is kind of struggling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not killing it like everybody else.
Right.
What everybody else
well,
says.
Well, and that's such a part of Silicon Valley culture.
It is. It is, unfortunately.
It's like, oh, I'm killing it.
Right.
You know, it's like, no, you're not.
Everything's rosy. But the reality of startup life is it's usually not rosy.
Right.
And for me personally, I'm just going to say it. Like when things go super well, I'm actually really nervous.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah. It's like, this should be tougher. Like, why is it easy? It should never be easy.
Yeah.
So in those moments, you're like, okay, what else can we do? Where else can we push? What else, you know, how can we get back into that, I guess, uncomfort zone in
yeah.
a way? But I think the second thing you say is really important because as founders or as people who want to start companies, you think it's this like idea, some magic thing that's going to work. And the reality is there's never a pure idea that's just immediately obvious to everybody because
right.
if it is, somebody else would do it.
Right.
And so most of these ideas start out as really terrible ideas and you keep working on it, you keep iterating on it. But you do need a check and someone to be honest with you and say, you know, this is not working.
Right.
And it's okay that it's not working, but like, don't waste your time on it because like at the end of the day, and the great thing about the Valley is there's just so much money.
Right.
And there's money chasing bad ideas, there's money chasing good ideas, there's money being given to great founders, there's money being given to terrible founders. But money is actually not the commodity.
Right.
And at the end of the day, our only commodity is you with, you know, your brain surgery. Like, our only commodity is time.
Right.
Right? So given the time that we have left and each of us has an unknown amount of time left. Like, what can you do that's most impactful?
Right.
Right.
And so, like, it's really important to me to, like, one of the best things about Silicon Valley in my mind is that failure isn't failure.
Right.
You know, it's not forever.
Right.
You're going to get another shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get up off the floor and, you know.
Yeah.
And so it rewards people who can do that, who are resilient,
yes.
You know, who can find the,
yes.
You know, but, and I feel like we need to push that message out,
mm-hmm.
You know, but it still can be hurtful.
Yes.
You know, like as a founder, to hear that, you know, I know in my experience, for instance, I've been the founder of 2 startups and I've been, you know, an early employee in 3 pretty well-known startups. Like for me, it's always difficult to say, you know, this idea sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel empowered to say your business model sucks,
mm-hmm.
or you don't own your IP. Like
right.
You think you do, but you don't.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know that I trust your co-founder. I mean, those are hard messages to put out there.
Yeah.
But you're right. If I don't say it, who's going to say it?
Right.
You know, even if you just plant a seed, like maybe I shouldn't trust this person.
Sure.
Or, you know, maybe I need to think harder about what my business model is.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what are my odds of, you know, getting out of this lawsuit or whatever.
Yeah.
Even if you just plant a seed and the person doesn't want to hear it at that moment, like maybe someday it's going to help them.
You know, startup resiliency is way more important. There's this kind of, I would say, cliche that failure's, you know, not a big deal, but when you are the person
it's
your company,
it is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. It's like, it's devastating,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you don't want to get up, and sometimes you need
and this is something
person to
I've
pull
been
you back
about,
up.
Is like, we're in a business where when you start out, the only thing you have to sell is your confidence in your
yes.
idea.
Yes.
And how do you wake up every day and like nurture that confidence?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Especially because there's going to be a lot of things,
yeah.
a lot of people
yeah.
who are out there knocking your confidence down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also as a woman, like it's harder because...
Yeah.
You know, there's that whole cliche, like, Lord, give me the confidence of some mediocre white man.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's kind of a real thing.
Yeah,
like,
it's true.
You know, I have all these tweets about Korean mom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody loves
yeah.
my Korean mom tweets.
Right.
But, you know, Korean mom is not exactly a builder-upper of confidence.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, I don't know about other Asian moms.
I think it's a pretty common Asian mom thing,
yeah.
or, you know, tiger moms these days, they call them, but it's sort of this idea of like a paper tiger, because they're, you know, let's say they take you down in the hopes that it builds you back up.
Right.
But some kids don't respond well to that, and they get taken down, and then they lose their confidence. And the confidence is really important when you're starting
that's
out.
That's what you're selling. That's
yeah.
all you have.
That's right.
It's your confidence
that's
in
right.
your idea and your confidence in your judgment.
Mm.
And like, if you lose your confidence in your judgment, that is the end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you need to just go get a job until
right.
you're ready again.
Just go call Google.
Yeah, because yeah. you can always alter your idea.
Yes.
But you cannot alter your judgment.
Right.
And if somebody's saying to you, I had a situation pretty recently where a very trusted person said, your deck is ugly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not in so many words, but she sent me a deck that she thought was
better.
Attractive.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I was like, but they have like, you know, they said are justified.
Yeah. And it's in PowerPoint. How dare
you? Know, you know what
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
talking about.
Yeah, I'm very
like,
familiar.
They said are justified. And like, this is so ugly. And just the fact that I couldn't even see what she was trying to say to me really did a number on my confidence about my
judgment.
Because I was like...
It didn't question her? Like, it didn't make you think, oh, well, she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Well, I'm trying to see what she's saying.
Right, sure.
Right? Like, I'm trying to meet her more than halfway.
Mm.
And I think as a founder, you have to do that.
Right.
Because But then you have to think to yourself, like, feedback, man, it can be a double-edged sword.
For sure.
And so if somebody that you really respect, who's in the same position as you,
right,
says, listen, this is a great idea, but you have this structural problem.
Yeah.
You know, then you can at least think of it as something you can work on, maybe. Right. And so, you know, I feel like that's a valuable thing that 106 does that is hard to describe to people.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen it really help people. So
yeah. I think it's really important. And the sense of community that founders get just coming together for these meetups, like, it's hard to find that almost anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I think
that's definitely
the thing, that, like, from my experience, when you go into a pitch and you're presenting your deck to like a VC, and there's this, you know, obviously power dynamic that's going on. They've got the money, you've got the idea. But like when they start asking you questions, and then like, it's clear to me that these people that we hold up high and they're supposed to be so smart and they have all the money and they ask these questions and you're like, really? Like, that's what you're asking me?
Yeah.
Like, I know my business inside and out, and you're asking me kind of a very basic question that we answered 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't lose confidence in what I believe. I lose confidence in them.
Hmm.
Right. In a way, it's like, do I really want your money now?
Right.
If you don't understand what we're doing.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I have to say, of all of the startups that I've been part of, you know, as a founder or as an employee, the number one thing I've realized is I'm really attracted to startups that have like a pretty big fundamental idea,
mm-hmm.
like graph-based, you know, stuff. But that kind of startup, it's difficult to know exactly how you're going to go to market.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's usually a lot of internal conflict and then a lot of layoffs, and people, you know, really smart people who are very mission focused end up leaving.
Mm-hmm.
That turns out to be really good for your long-term career here.
Yeah.
Because they're scattered to the winds,
right?
They're like dandelion seeds. And you can hit them up and you can get another job if you need one, whatever. But, you know, then you ask yourself, like, why am I always attracted to this type of company, which always feels the same way?
Interesting.
And I think it's because, you know, you can get so mission focused that you don't interrogate the business model well enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I didn't even know how to think about business models until about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And that was way into my entrepreneur's journey, right?
Sure.
But I didn't. And I feel like, you know, other people need to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe they didn't either.
Mm. So what happened 5 years ago?
I think I just, like, my development was at a certain level where I sort of felt like, oh, I get it now.
Okay.
Like, in terms of business models, there's really only so many business models.
Right.
And you have to keep track of how they're changing over time, which I think a lot of people don't. They look at data that's too early.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say for consumer business models, there's advertising, there's selling shit to people, and, you know, there's maybe like recurring revenue, like
membership subscriptions.
Yeah, or subscriptions, that kind of thing. That's it.
Yeah.
You got to pick one of those.
Right.
And they change over time. For, you know, enterprise side business models, you know, there's recurring revenue, there's freemium,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's, but it's not that many.
Yeah.
And I feel like we all need to understand exactly how those work and how they're changing over time.
Right.
Like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, freemium wasn't even a thing.
Yeah.
But also, like, what does it mean to you as a consumer or as a potential partner or as a potential acquirer or whatever to look at a company that is in the, like, LinkedIn?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to that company that they make money by selling your your profile, data to, you know, recruiters, rather than, you know, making money some other way.
Right.
Like that part, I don't think I understood until I had gone through several iterations.
Yeah.
Because I trusted like advertising to an extent that I probably should never have.
Right. So LinkedIn as a model now today, it's not membership based, it's not subscription based. The only people paying for LinkedIn is the people who want the data, the recruiters and the salespeople and other people. So by having a LinkedIn profile, you're implicitly agreeing to this business model of having your information sold.
Right.
Yeah. So I will challenge you though, freemium did exist because in 2000, when I first moved to California to start working in San Francisco, the company I worked for was freemium business model.
Okay.
And it didn't work. At that time, like it was a relatively new thing and it was very unclear how we would make money. At the end of the day, we didn't make money.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also the kind of dot-com boom bust the first time around.
But, you know, I worked at ePinions, you know, which was like, you know, so overhyped. I worked at KnowNow, also overhyped. I worked at Friendster, also overhyped. Right. And none of them made any money.
Yeah. How do we tell this next generation of founders that this is a real opportunity? Because the narrative today is like, oh, if you're not building a $1 billion company, you're kind of wasting your time.
One of the things that I tell them now that I did not 15 years ago is 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you couldn't get money from actual businesses. Right? Like
from customers.
Right.
Okay.
Like your choices were VC and VC because that was it.
Well, good VC or bad VC.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was VC or VC. Yeah. Or, you know, like you could get a little bit of angel money, but it was really VC or VC.
Yeah.
Nowadays, like I was in New York talking to some female founders, many of whom are in the fashion space.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, if I were you, I don't think I'd waste a lot of time like talking to VCs.
Yeah.
I think I would go to businesses in your realm and see if they have money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know this domain and they can like evaluate you in a way that other people can't. Mm-hmm. And so it'll help you to get money from industry. Like that wasn't available, you know, especially for women, because women's startup ideas are often coming from women's experiences, which, you know, often are not, I mean, I don't know how many VCs I've seen who are like, oh, I'm going to ask my wife if she likes this idea. It's like, you know what? Shouldn't you be in the business of?
Right.
And I also know VCs who are like, you know, the biggest problem in VC is that at a certain point you lose you're not in touch with normal life anymore.
Yes.
And then you can't really like become a good investor for normal people because you're not a normal person. Mm. And then you like fun Peloton. Sorry.
It's okay. I'm familiar with,
you know,
I know a couple of the people who funded Peloton and I think they did okay. But I think your point is valid in that, you know, one of the best examples of this, I'll ask my wife, was Pinterest. Because I remember when Ben went out to fundraise, I think he spent like a year and he couldn't get anybody to buy. And, you know, shout out to Sarah. She was the first person to invest in Pinterest because she understood it, you know, like emotionally, she knew that they were onto something. This was a new community. This was a new way to share information, I guess, but really a view into your personality because of your Pinterest page. And I used it way back when it was just mostly women, unfortunately. But it couldn't get funding.
Isn't it still mostly women?
I think they're making inroads into like making it more kind of balanced. But yeah, it's still majority female customer. But that's a huge business that will never get funded. Like,
well, we didn't think of, I mean, if you look at the whole history of Silicon Valley, until maybe 10 years ago, it was nerdy white dudes selling like tech shit to other nerdy white dudes, right? It's like, oh, can I interest you in this chip? Or, you know, can I interest you in this router?
Yeah.
And so that's what our whole business was built around.
Mm-hmm.
And when you meet you know, a VC who did really well in that system, like John Doerr.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he worked at a chip maker.
Yeah.
That was his expertise.
Yeah.
And he got into consumer stuff through that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was a little bit unusual at that time.
Sure, sure.
Now you have people who like, oh, I just came from, you know, McKinsey. And they're going to tell you about the tech business?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, like the guy who fired me at Friendster, you know, Scott Sasa. He used to run NBC television,
mm-hmm.
right? So he's yeah. like, oh, I know the consumer.
Right.
It's like, well, do you even use the internet, dude?
Yeah, they knew that. They were consumer.
Right.
Right. Right.
And also, I mean, for instance, he had this whole idea that, I guess in television, if the TV goes down for 15 seconds, you just fire everybody involved. And we were like, that's kind of not how the internet
yeah.
works.
Yeah,
because
down
there is, well, and you know, any given connection,
yeah.
there could be a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
He didn't want to hear that, so.
So it's interesting. I definitely want to talk about kind of like, there's a lot of stuff that happened in the past, I'd say 20 years or even 40 years, if you want to go back to like John Doerr and the original,
yeah.
You know, the firm of the Valley at the time was Kleiner Perkins. And I think there's definitely been a shift, like a generational shift. There's definitely a lot more female VCs, which is great.
Not really.
Not
I
enough.
I think there's less than one partner per firm.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's still a lot of work.
So, I mean,
done.
Is that a lot of female VCs?
No. Relative to 20 years ago.
Okay.
That's true. But yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done. There's, you know, lots of programs that are trying to get this change happening.
Mm-hmm.
But just really quickly, from your point of view as a female founder and CTO,
mm-hmm.
do you feel it's better now for this next generation of female technologists?
I would say it's easier now if you're in a stereotypically female field.
So you still have to be in this, like...
So I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Justin Kalbeck was one of my VCs.
Oh, boy.
And you know, for a long time, I thought he was really good VC for women. Because he really helped his female founders. And I'll tell you why. So he asked me one day whether I wanted to meet this other female founder and, you know, we could maybe pair up. And I said, you know, it's fashion. Do I look like I know about fashion? you know, like, no thanks. But I introduced him to a guy who was looking for a job at the CTO level,
mm-hmm.
who became the technical co-founder of the company,
okay.
Which is Stitch Fix.
Wow.
So he helped her a lot.
I hope you got equity.
No, I didn't get shit. I don't even think he paid for my drink.
Oh,
like, I've given people like CTOs and VPs a binge and like for like a $6 beer.
Wow.
Because I work for the engineer.
Yeah.
I don't see myself as working for the VC.
Right.
I don't work for, you know,
right.
like that's, I work for the engineer.
Yeah.
I do what's right for the engineer.
Yeah.
So anyway, and obviously she's done fantastically well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's made the most of a lot of opportunities
mm-hmm.
and, you know, props to her. But like, what I don't see yet is that type of women's success, is it trickling down or sideways to women who are more, who want to do something that's more technical?
Yeah.
Like a lot of it is like, oh, women understand women.
Right.
You're a mom, you understand
right.
moms.
Right.
Like, that's cool, but I'm not a mom.
Right.
I mean, I don't think I'm like the most shopping oriented, you know, beauty, no.
Right.
I don't even know how to pronounce. Is it Glossier or Glossier? I don't even know.
I don't
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for people like me who want to do something that is consumer facing but extremely technical,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it helps at all.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think
because the women don't help you that much.
Mm-hmm.
The female VCs that I've met, like some of them are really helpful, but a lot of them are not that helpful.
That's interesting. I think that could be like a whole nother episode.
I know.
But I think you're right in that we can probably sit down and name like the 5 or 10 kind of famous female founders.
Yeah.
And I would say the majority of them is in that kind of women's consumer category. I can think of one founder who worked in like robotics, hard tech.
I can think of one who was a technical founder of Kafka.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I learned that surprised me, but I'll just put it out there, is the value that a VC gets for a female CTO is almost nil. You have to be a female CEO.
Interesting.
Right?
Interesting.
And somebody told me this and I was like, what? Like, I've just wasted like the last 10 years of my life.
Yeah.
But that is what they told me, is like, you're not visible enough and you're only visible to a certain number of people, most of whom don't like you anyway, whatever, whatever. And so I was like, who thought of that?
I'm not surprised at that, because I've heard the same for Asian male CTO versus like an Asian male CEO.
Right. They don't even look you in the eye if you're an Asian male CTO, right? It's like, oh,
I can walk into
check,
a pitch and they assume I'm the CTO, so they're like, where's the other guy? And I was like, I'm the guy. There's no other guy.
Right.
But this meeting's already over.
Right.
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 Yeah.
No, but so that really surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like as a woman or as a person of color, it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
Like, you need to go for it because there's no, you're not gonna, you know how in boxing, like, you can win by knockout or you can win by points?
Mm-hmm.
You're not gonna win on points.
You're never gonna win on points.
Like,
yeah.
Me, you,
yeah.
No points.
I'm gonna knock out that. Like,
So you gotta, like, put him on the ground or you're out.
That's right.
So he's gonna put you on the ground.
That's
so,
right.
Which, I think it's very inimical to a lot of how women are socialized, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't want to believe this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was like, really? I thought I could just be go to school and, you know, like,
check
work hard.
Boxes.
And like, maybe get an MBA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not how it works for us.
Don't get an MBA.
I'm not going to get an MBA because I already did too much school.
Right.
But, you know, that's not how it works for us.
Yeah.
We got to go for the knockout.
Right, right. I think that's a super, like, strong way to end this conversation. That's one of the best things I've heard, actually, is go for the knockout. I'm a big, you know, UFC MMA fan.
Me too.
And like, I like the knockout artists. Yeah, but you, like, the people that go in the ring and just kind of like do the thing, it's less exciting. So you want the knockout artists.
Right.
And so all the founders out there, all the potential founders out there,
go for the knockout.
So hope you enjoyed that conversation with Joyce Park from 106 Miles. I think that was one of our best episodes. Definitely subscribe and you'll see the next guest that we have. I think it's going to be a big one too. So thanks for joining us today. Have a good one.
There's a lot of equipment here.
This guy, I thought we were just going to be like two mics. I thought we were just going to have like two mics on like a little recorder. And he's like, no, let me bring some stuff. So this is what we end up with every week.
All right.
This is crazy.